I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Everyone, and welcome to Minute 62 of Season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today are Caroline and Justin of the old time,
close.
The old movie time machine. There you go.
There it is.
Welcome back.
You see, hey, Rob, thank you for having us.
You got me confused. Yeah.
Thanks for having us back.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you guys for coming back. You know, I had a fun conversation yesterday. Hope you guys did too.
Oh yeah, definitely. We went deep on the Waldorfs and the Astors and all of this.
Yes, we did. Yes,
we learned so much. Yeah.
That's right. So minute 62 begins with Ernie acting as a butler and ends with George still trying to understand what's going on. You know, he's clueless throughout this whole movie. That's all I can
really
say.
Is. Now, I found, I don't know how familiar you are with the full Stewart catalog, Rob, but this is a recurring theme that we've seen in other movies where he is oblivious, especially to the charms of women around him who seem to really want his attention, and he is clueless. It's some kind of Jimmy Stewart trait of some kind. His characters, they tend to fall into this somehow. I don't know where that comes from.
What movie do you think he's most that way?
I feel like,
oh my God.
Like, where do you think is his perfection? Yeah, I mean, his perfection of being oblivious.
Vertigo. Yeah,
Vertigo with Midge, right?
You're right.
She is so thirsty for him, has been hanging around waiting for him, and he is oblivious as all get out. And right. Also, I think Bell Book and Candle, like, they, Kim Novak needs to use magic to to get them together. So
right. She needs to hypnotize him with her cat.
Yeah,
to get him to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think this speaks to like a larger theme in his career where he does sort of transition from leading man into slightly older, cranky leading man. He's very fussy in his later years.
Well, have you ever seen I think it's called Right to Way? Right of Way? It was one of his last movies. It was with him and Betty Davis, where they play this elderly couple who make a pact that they're going to commit suicide. And their kids trying to convince them not to. It really was interesting.
That's going on my list right now.
Yeah, I'm like going to Google that one.
I think it was called Right of Way. It was an HBO. Yeah, so 1983. It was an HBO movie that they made with the two of them.
Wow, okay. Now, I do know that, Carolyn, you might not remember this because this was 1991, but we did see a James Stewart movie, a new one, in the theater in 1991.
And I already know which one.
Tale, there you go. Five Will Goes West.
Oh, I do remember seeing that in the theater.
Okay, great.
And, you know, I mean, it's a great film. It's a great American classic.
His last film, right?
Yes, I believe it was his last.
Okay. Yeah.
Rodents were really big at that time. Okay. Mm-hmm. There was like the Great Mouse Detective.
Yes.
American. I mean, you know, just a lot of mice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's curious.
Well, it's easy to do that when you're using, animation.
True.
Right. I mean, I'm also thinking like The Rescuers.
Yeah.
Well, they can be made very cute very easily. They're easy to look at, the cartoon mice. So
yeah, the real ones less so.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we ended things yesterday with George showing up in front of 320 Sycamore Road, And, you know, we actually now get to see that he really does show up at 320 Sycamore, or at least 320 something. Because
Yes.
there is, you know, we see the door, and we can see a lot of broken windows. We see a tablecloth covering the glass panes of the front door. You know, you can see on top some other broken glass panes. Yeah, kids in the neighborhood, including you know, George and Mary, have had their fill of throwing rocks at this particular place.
Yes,
over the
for
years,
for sure.
Yeah, and there's a little sign on the door that says "Bridal Suite." And as yes. George is just staring there, trying to figure out what to do, so the curtain slash tablecloth is quickly thrown back, and we see Ernie's head pop through it, and he goes, "Hiya, good evening, sir."
Yes.
I love this whole moment, and I love the physical comedy of it with the top hat, and as he's sort of standing in Ernie's standing in the doorway. And,
well, I love he's wearing shorts as he's doing this.
Right, right.
He's got knee highs and
like,
shorts.
He's got like a suit jacket with tails on it, but shorts.
That's right.
And a top hat.
That's right.
And then he has that great little like kind of Charlie Chaplin visual of like leaning back against the door and popping the top hat up a little bit.
Yes.
Just fantastic.
Yeah, it really is great. I really do think that is a Charlie Chaplin homage.
Nod, for sure.
From this, because there's the Charlie Chaplin movie where he's pretending to be a statue. And he keeps hitting mm-hmm. someone on the head and he keeps moving back and forth. You know, like he's a, I think he's supposed to be like a clock. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so it looks that way, the same way that he does it, where he just, you know, puts his head up and I love how he puts his hand out at the same time as if he's looking for a tip. Exactly.
Did you guys notice the jump cut? We have the continuity error of the wet tweed jacket that George is wearing. I mean, it's an essential thing to do. I mean, he's coming in from his downpour, and so his jacket is soaked, and then we get just a slightest jump cut, and he's very dry. He's ready for the next. Yeah.
Well, of course. Come on, you didn't see you didn't see the dryer in between.
I did not, but they've got so much stuff in that yard that it would not surprise me.
No, maybe he has some of the technology from Back to the Future too. You know, where he just pushes the little button on the jacket
drawing
and it quickly just there you go, drawing mode. There you go. So it's possible. I mean, come on, this movie has so many connections to Back to the Future too. So why not?
I mean, we can do a whole episode on that. That's one of my favorite movies. Let's
do it. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think for that, we should have Rob on Old Movie Time Machine.
Yeah, sure.
I think we might need to have Rob as a guest to discuss that one.
I would love to do that. And then George walks into the house as, back when with the hat trick. So, you know, he sprays the water of his hat. He like
into his hand
as that's the tip. Like what, you know, give me a tip and the tip is going to be more water.
Water.
Yes. And while that is kind of, again, old timey humor, we talked about it yesterday, but that holds up to me. That's still funny. That will always be funny.
And Ernie plays it really well.
Sight gag. Yeah.
And I love how he plays it. He just like shakes his hand, you know, shakes off the water and then continues with his job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meaning even if I'm pissed at him for what he just did right now, this is George's night. I'm not going to ruin it by getting upset that he just splashed water on my hands. You know.
Yeah. Very good sport.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
Indeed.
And then we see that George sees Mary smiling at him. And, you know, we get to see from afar, you know, the great things that she's done here. You know, you see flowers, you see, you know, she's spent the last few hours decorating this place really well.
Oh, yeah. They kind of like pan around that room to give us the whole.
Right. That well, tomorrow we'll
surprise.
Get. Right. Tomorrow we can get a little bit more of that.
Yeah. And it's just such a cozy space once you're finally inside after, you know, the time we've spent in the rain. And yeah, it's a decrepit house. Yeah, it's falling apart. And yeah, the stairs aren't intact or whatever. But
well, we see also the rain coming in. Yeah, you know, from the second floor. Yeah. You know, it really is dilapidated. But she's definitely. She's made it very homey for him.
Oh yeah, and just her. I mean, Donna Reed is amazing in this movie. She's so classy, great performance, and just serves as his rock and is amazing throughout for it. So she exudes a warmth, you know, so her standing in front of that roaring fire in this weird old house. I mean, that's home. I get it.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah. And so we get a little bit of a pan just to see the, you know, how bad the house is. You know, you see like a chair that's on the stairs. You see all these cobwebs. I mean, George does not have a good look on his face when he's looking at all this.
No, he's horrified.
He's like, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, what just happened here?
You know, we see that there's a lantern hung up because apparently there's no electricity working in the house at this point. And there's a bucket hanging that is probably collecting some of that rain that's coming through.
Yes.
Yeah. And did you guys notice the poster on the wall?
The Get a Fisk, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I had to look this up.
It's time to retire. Yes. It says time to retire. Get a Fisk.
Very well. Good job, marketing team. Well done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's, let's put it this way. I think most people watching this movie will not notice it. It's something when you're watching it this way.
Because I looked up, you know, researching this, there are different posters of. They all have kids in them. Some of them are fishing. This one is a kid holding like a candle, right? Is that the deal? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Do we know why a kid for tires?
No, I don't know the answer to that.
I'm just wondering if that was some kind of, that was their mascot, you know, some 2-year-old or whatever, for some reason.
According to the research that I did, I didn't go to the marketing aspects of it, but I mean, it's unbelievable some of the stuff that I found about it. So it was originally known as so it's an American tire company that is in Chicopee Falls, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And it was a major force in the tire industry from the late 1900s all the way through the late 1920s.
Okay.
It was bought up in 1898 by a man named Noyes Fisk, and he renamed it the Fisk Rubber Company. Mm-hmm. By 1910, they had more than 600 employees, and during World War One, they had more than 3,000.
Wow. Okay. So they were part of the war effort.
Yeah. By the end of World War One, they had 4,500 people working for them.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. In the 1920s, they had plants in New Bedford, Massachusetts, Jewett City, Connecticut, and Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And they had retail stores in more than 40 states. Their main plant was producing 5,000 tires every day.
Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad. I suspect that's good, right? 5,000? That seems like a lot.
Yeah. 5,000 is a lot. That definitely.
And were they affiliated with any particular auto company?
Nope.
Do we know? Just general all-purpose tire?
Okay. General all-purpose.
Okay. Gotcha.
They basically, in the 1930s, they were basically, the DuPont family took an interest in the U.S. Rubber Company, who had already controlled General Motors, and they basically forced Fisk out of business.
Interesting.
You know, in 1930 they had 121 stores, and in 1934 they only had 3.
Wow.
They had to close 118 stores in those 3 years.
Wow.
And what does that mean, putting the squeeze on them? Like, how did that happen, I wonder? Like, probably the Depression plays into it somewhat. Like
the Depression is definitely
climate.
It's
really, really poor, yeah.
But again, if you have the backing of the DuPonts, you know, you're able to push out the smaller companies, I guess.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, were they setting up shop next door or across the street or something like that, trying to get the market share or whatever.
I mean, what it says here, is that the domination of the replacement tire market, including bus and taxi companies, by the four leading tire manufacturers was at the expense of Fisk and other medium-sized firms while reducing profit margins for all.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, it didn't last very long, which is probably why they had all these posters lying around.
And their legacy lives on through that one poster.
That's right.
Now we know.
That is correct. Yeah. The little poster of the kid with the little candle holding a tire.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
Did you guys notice the music in the background during this scene?
I mean, I heard it, but I why don't you enlighten us?
Well, it's interesting because as we have talked about, George is a wannabe traveler, right? He's trying to escape small town life and see the world. It's been his goal since he was a kid. And this particular brand of music sort of plays into that because it was part of a fad of the early 20th century of incorporating Hawaiian sounds into modern popular music. So this is, and this kind of goes along with the posters that we will be seeing shortly as well from the South Pacific. But we get this Hawaiian slide guitar sound over modern pop music, which is sort of representative of the allure of Hawaii and Hawaiian culture to continental Americans.
It's a little tiki bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This is the start of all that. We would see this explode later after the war when all of the troops are coming back from the Pacific Theater and being stationed in Hawaii and everything, and that blows up into legitimate tiki culture. It becomes a, like a kitsch fad type of thing. But it's happening
still
here.
It's hot.
Too.
Yeah. Tiki culture
I love it. And what it does here is it also shows that Mary knows her man. You know, she knows George. Yes. She knows what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
So if she, you know, even though we've talked about how oblivious he is, if she wants to get him in the mood, then she's got to, you know, make it sound as if he's traveling off somewhere, you know, in the exotic Pacific, I guess.
Right, right. And this is this particular instrument, the Hawaiian lap steel. It's, I think at this point they've managed to amplify it so it can become like a lead instrument. I think initially the resonance chamber was too small, so it was a very quiet instrument, sort of enhancing somebody else's lead, but now it can become a lead instrument, and it has a very ethereal, dreamlike quality to it that I think suits this scene as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Takes in his, you know, what will be his future in this house with this woman.
Mm-hmm. And as he's like panning through that, first of all, that's great insight into the way the music plays into, because there's no dialogue here. So we're dealing with the music, you know, that's helping to set the mood for us also as to, you know, what's possibly going through George's mind at this point, you know, and as we pan through, we even get a quick glimpse into the bedroom, which, I don't know what it's supposed to, what the room really was, you know, because it's a two-story house. The odds are the bedroom would not be on the first floor.
Right.
But maybe it was. I don't know. Maybe there is one room there or something like that. So we can see the bed. We can see clothes laid out on the bed. We see a trunk. We see shoes on the floor. We see a candle in the background. You know, Mary has spent a lot of time during this day setting up this house.
And done a great job.
Oh, for sure.
I want to be there. I don't care about the leaky roof. I want to be there.
Well, I think that's part of the idea that George isn't supposed to care about the roof. And George keeps looking around, even though there's like, we see rain dripping down and around him.
Yeah.
You know, as he's looking around.
Which is probably why she set up the bedroom ground floor, I would guess.
Well, no, I don't think they could get upstairs. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
If you look at the stairs. I don't think they're going to be going upstairs.
I mean, that newel post was never affixed to the top, was never affixed to it. So that gag ran throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. And And then we get a quick glimpse again of Mary looking at him. And did any of you notice that in the back of Mary, what that looks like there's a picture of Mary with like a with a Hawaiian lei on her?
Oh, yes, that does ring a bell. Yes.
You know,
So
so
again, she's trying to. Do we know?
did they
Do you have
travel?
any
No.
idea?
If that was your question.
Right.
No, they were planning on going to travel.
Right.
You know, that was their goal, you know, at the beginning of today. They were going to go traveling and you know, they have the run of the bank and that's just not going to happen. You know, I mean,
We're
it could be
back in
that the picture
again.
is of someone else, but it does look a lot like Mary. But there's no way of knowing for sure if it's him. And then Ernie walks over to George, who's still in shock, and you know, takes off his hat and then takes off his jacket, and George is a
Yes.
little surprised by this. You know, he didn't expect it.
Yes. And I think, can we talk about Fitz for a second?
Sure.
Because he looks great. Everything he's got going on outfit wise, I'm totally behind. He is layered in tweeds. The actual tweed jacket he has under his top coat, I mean, that's classic hunting style, Scottish Glen tweeds with the outside pockets and everything where you keep your shotgun shells and all this. But it's immaculately tailored. He looks great. I think the only thing
And he's
missing is he
completely
doesn't have
dry.
patches on his elbows. Yes, exactly. Because of that machine from the front yard, so we know that that's fact now, that's canon,
That's right.
that has dried him off. But it's just a great look. It's nice to see young Jimmy Stewart, especially since on our show we spend a lot of time with him like 10 years from now when he's aging, it's late 50s, and it's just different. Here he's clearly a leading man. He's real trim, very fit. He looks great. He looks like a leading man. So it's nice to see him. And she looks amazing as well. She looks great throughout this entire film.
Yeah, that's true. And as he's walking towards her, he like gets startled by some more rain that's falling nearby him.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
they do that
Is
well.
this the minute where we see the table, right? The
No,
table setting?
table's tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to that
Okay.
tomorrow.
We'll talk about it tomorrow then. Okay.
Yeah. Because the minute ends as he's walking towards her. So that's it. We've
Okay. Ah.
come to the end of the minute.
Right. Okay.
Right. So did
Yeah, it's just a sweet scene.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and so do either of you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I just happen to love that visual gag with the top hat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm a sucker for a top hat trick.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm just excited
Do either of you know
to see where this evening
what's
goes.
behind George? If you look as he's walking towards Mary at the end of the minute, it looks like all these things that are hanging down behind him. They look like
Like the sort of
beads or yeah.
beads?
Like a
Yes.
beaded curtain was what I
Yes.
thought.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't necessarily look like something that she would have put up. That must have been something that you know, got ruined over the years or something like that.
Yeah, that feels period appropriate. I
Yeah.
think these houses, especially, from, mid-19th century, let's ballpark it, very velvety, very luxurious, a lot of deep stained
Ornate.
hardwood, yes, hand work, right? And a lot of paisley prints and things like this. So I could see, some kind of, yeah, like a half curtain over that entryway with some kind of crystal beads or whatever. I could see that
Yeah.
being a thing back then, for sure.
Okay. Cool. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Uplifting Experience Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow an uplifting experience. So, do either of you or both of you have stories that you want to tell?
I definitely do,
Okay.
Carolyn. I don't know about you, but
I'm gonna let you go first, and
okay.
then we'll see that where that takes me.
Well, I'm pleased to report that this is actually fairly recent. This is a new positive experience for me. So I'm a huge Beatles fan, Beatlemaniac, and we are living through a golden heyday of being a Beatles fan right now. It's very important music to me. We grew up with it. it's been, you know, just very formative for me as a person, and I love their music and the message so much. And the dream has always been, wouldn't it be nice to hear these songs in a modern way? Because, of course, the early 60s material, they're recording into two-track and then to four-track, and originally were mixed for mono and everything. I know I'm getting kind of nerdy here, but it was never a possibility for that to happen until 2 years ago when they put out their Get Back documentary, and Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings fame develops this software to separate the different instruments into their own tracks. So now we can mix everything into stereo and it will sound like a modern record. So this is happening now. They're doing this, and they just re-released their two best of albums, the Red and the Blue records, which is a nice cross section of all of their work. And as a fan hearing these new mixes, it's like hearing them for the first time, and it makes me so happy. I listened to A Hard Day's Night and I felt like my head was going to explode. It was so exciting to hear it. And I'm just excited that the music now exists in a modern context and can be heard next to modern songs and sound just as good as those songs, because I think that's how you build your audience, you know. So it's just been a great time. And we get a new song out of this period too, something that was never expected, but now we have a new Beatles song. And it's just, it's been, yeah, very positive.
Wait, it was a song that was just, that they did that they just never released? How do you have a new Beatles song when half of them are not here?
Yeah, exactly. This has always been the question. So they did this in the mid-90s when they put out their documentary series called The Beatles Anthology. And John Lennon's wife, Yoko, gives Paul McCartney a tape of some of his demos from the 1970s and says, here, you can have these songs. And they did the best that they could with two of the three songs that they got. In as far as trying to isolate John's vocal so he could be a lead singer, and then the other three members played new tracks along with it and sort of rearranged the song and did their own vocals and everything. And that was a very exciting time as well. That's really when I became a diehard Beatles fan. Now, there was a third song that they worked on in the early 90s called Now and Then, and they just, I think it's a combination of things. Like, I think George wasn't a huge fan of the song, and also the quality was worse than the other two, so it was harder to isolate John's vocal. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have this new technology. Paul has been dying to do this song for ages. He's been talking about it since the 90s, about, I'm going to finish this song. It's very personal for him, as this, this is his best friend he gets to sing with again.
Oh, wow.
So that they've gone back, and now it exists. And this came out, I want to say early November, I think. It is called Now and Then, and it is really amazing. It's such a gift that if you were a fan, you never knew that you were actually going to get. But now we're getting these things, and it's very exciting.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So, Caroline, do you have a story?
Yeah, of
course. Yeah. Mine is so completely different than my brother's.
But that's good. That's the important. That's what we want here. We want diversity. Right. If you were to tell a story right now about you loving the Beatles and being able to, then I'd be disappointed. So, see, now you get something completely different.
Right. But I will say I am about to celebrate 5 years with my horse, Perkins, who is my first horse. And I lifelong horse obsessed girl that never got to have one. So kind of a special time of year for us to be celebrating 5 years, and that he's still happy and healthy. And my dog is...
Dog is very jealous of your horse.
Yes, sounds that way.
I wonder why. But yeah, I mean, that's just this around this time of year. It makes me very much appreciate how well he is still doing at the age of 21, and that he's just brought so much, like he's made my dreams come true, you know? So that's my happy story.
Okay, great. How long, I mean, you said that he, since he is 21, like How long do horses usually...
Anywhere between 25 and 30.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he's... I obviously got him as an older horse, and he just has been, you know, the perfect guy to show me what it is to own a horse, learn how to ride, do all the things with him. He's just been fantastic, and I had a pretty tough year this year that has left me out of the saddle due to some sciatic issues for the last 4 months, so I'm hopeful that I will be starting off back in the saddle very soon with him. So
excellent. Well, I wish you and your horse best of luck and health.
Thank you.
Yes. Happy anniversary. Yes, congratulations.
Happy anniversary.
I know.
You guys are a cute couple.
5 years. We're so cute. Yeah.
What's a 5-year anniversary? I know 1 year is paper. I don't remember what 5 is.
Yeah.
No, I think 5 years is wood. Yeah.
Okay. Could be.
I want to say that's what I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I mean, I have celebrated these things along with my husband. Yeah. I've done paper, cotton, leather. No, I think maybe it's leather. And then there's wood. 6 was iron. So I'm pretty sure 5 was wood.
I had no idea.
Okay.
I know. I got him a set of cast iron pans for our 6th wedding anniversary. Wow. And I had the bottoms engraved with cheers for 6 years. I mean, that's, you know.
Okay.
That's a solid gift.
Yes.
Nicely done. Yeah.
Yes. Good cast iron pan.
There you go. All right. So you guys want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. So our show is called Old Movie Time Machine. You can find us at all the usual podcasting hotspots. We're everywhere. Also on YouTube as well. You can find us there. You could write to us an email if you feel the need. We're partyline@oldmovietimemachine.com and follow us on Instagram @timemachinepodcasts. Please and thank you.
And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.